Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Man, I thought I was about to have to do this show by myself, and don't nobody want to hear that, Andrew.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with that, but, you know, when the call of nature happens, the call of nature happens, and sometimes the Blog Talk call doesn't happen.
Yes, indeed. Good evening, afternoon, whenever you're listening to this, I'm not sure, and welcome as the Chair Shot Podcast Network, CES. Presents the Raw Reaction for August 6th, 2018. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Welcome back, everybody. I'd apologize for missing last week's show, but apparently everybody did, so it's not my fault.
Fair enough.
That is the third man, Andrew Ballas. Unfortunately, family obligations have Mr. Asaro out for this week's edition. He's hanging out with the Thugster, and when the Thugster wants to hang out, you simply do not say no.
I mean, I'm assuming I do not know the Thugster well enough to confirm nor deny, so I'll just go with it.
Trust us, you do not say no to the Thugster. This is how things end badly, just saying. But anyway, so we got a little bit to catch up on here. You know, I got to tell you, it was really weird, Andrew, because usually I'm reviewing four wrestling shows a week in podcast format. I do Raw here on CSPN, and then I do SmackDown 205 Live and NXT on occasion on another network. I did exactly zero podcasts last week, and let me tell you something. It is the weirdest it has felt in a week in a very long time not doing these shows.
Yes, but was it slightly refreshing or was it just off-putting?
You know, it's funny that you say that. I was actually talking to one of my friends about it, and I was like, you know, it's weird getting to watch the shows without having to immediately criticize and critique them right afterwards. You kind of enjoy them more when you're watching simply as a fan.
Isn't it one of those weird things where the critique aspect kind of takes a small sliver of something away from the show?
Well, I'd assume it's even worse for Tony, because Tony has to sit there, watch it, review it, and then talk about it. That poor bastard.
Yes, I'm very happy that I did not get stuck as, like, the Raw and SmackDown guy for thechairshot.com, because I would have probably killed myself by now.
If it's any consolation, Stephen Mitchell does a bandwidth-killing wonderful job.
I mean, yes, he does, because he covers basically everything and anything that's on television. So I give him a lot of credit there.
Although I will say this much about the opinion pieces on thechairshot.com. I have three simple words for you. I have three simple words for you, Andrew. This is progress. All I'm going to say for now.
I wonder what that's hinting towards. Should be fun to find out.
Dun, dun, dun! All right, so, do you want a kind of quick hitter tonight's episode of Monday Night Raw? I'm thinking we go start to finish and we kind of focus on the matches rather than just... We can, like, touch on the backstage segments, but this was a very in-ring heavy episode of Monday Night Raw, so I feel like it might be easier to focus on the matches themselves while only mentioning the backstage segments and then going into more explicit detail when necessary, such as the Paul Heyman segment that aired a little bit later on in the show.
Yeah, that sounds fine, because the backstage segments didn't do much aside from just reinforce what they've been leading towards for the last week or so, which, yeah, we didn't have a show last week, but most people have probably still been watching it for, you know, a couple weeks in a row at least.
Our opening segment scheduled for 15 minutes, because they usually are.
This would be the part where you go 15 minutes.
Oh, 15 minutes, yes, 15.
Is Kurt Angle and Stephanie McMahon's personally appointed constable to Monday Night Raw, Baron Corbin, coming out to basically tell us everything that Kurt Angle and Stephanie McMahon's personally appointed constable to Monday Night Raw, Baron Corbin, told us last week? Except for the
but
added
that was also after
Kurt
a 3-minute recap. Don't forget the recap, the video package now. Come on, that's like 3 minutes of our lives that we waste every day.
Well, 3 minutes that you waste, that's my piss break before Raw starts. I know what happened last week on Raw. I don't need to watch it. And especially
fair
not
enough
when they're going to do it in dramatic announcer voice such as this, telling you about what happened last week on Monday Night Raw.
True.
The only added bonus for this week's Kurt Angle and Stephanie McMahon's personally appointed constable to Monday Night Raw, Baron Corbin, because he didn't correct JoJo this week, therefore I'm doing it properly. The only addition to that is the fact that Kurt Angle threatens Brock Lesnar that if he ever tries to pull a stunt like he did again last week, he'll whoop his ass like it's SummerSlam 2003 all over again. Not in those exact words, but you get his point.
Yeah, I'd like to see that happen.
Roman Reigns is personas interrupticus here, and him and Corbin go back and forth for a bit before Angle has the genius idea to make a match. Hey, what about that? And our opening contest for this show is Roman Reigns taking on Baron Corbin, which we kind of saw coming last week when Reigns decked Corbin in the locker room as he was being escorted out of the arena. The match itself runs for a Larry Zonka-listed 18 minutes and 40. Jesus Christ, it was 18 minutes?
Yeah, it went for a while because there was like two or three commercial breaks somewhere in there, too.
Ugh. Needless to say, that is way too long for a Baron Corbin-Roman Reigns match. It suffers due to it, and there are plenty of lethargic spots during the course of the match. Reigns does pick up the pinfall victory with the spear after an assist from the little Irishman, Finn Balor. I don't know why I turned Jamaican there for a second, but whatever.
Little Irishman, yeah.
Taco Bell done did it again. If you see that episode of Table for Three, that reference is funny. Anyway, the wee little Irish lad ended up giving the assist to Roman for a Superman punch off of the ring steps, and a spear puts Corbin down at 18 minutes and 42 seconds. This felt like 18 minutes and 42 seconds.
Yeah, it did. I mean, the match wasn't that bad, honestly, and the crowd was really, really behind Roman. Like, I don't know if it's just because he's billed from Pensacola, and maybe it's like the whole Florida hometown thing, even though Jacksonville's not Pensacola, I'm fully aware. But you know what I'm getting at. Like, that whole area is kind of like the hometown vibe thing, and they were buying into everything he said, even the cookie-cutter back-and-forth lines and the tease for him saying the word bitch and all this other stuff. Like, it was weird. Like, Florida's like bizarro land. It's not Canada anymore. It's fucking Florida.
Well, this is a home state situation, I think. I think once we get up to Greensboro, North Carolina next week in Flair Country for Monday Night Raw, we'll be back to hating Roman Reigns again.
I don't know, because this show wasn't bad for him either. Like, he was actually likable throughout most of the show.
You know who doesn't come off as likable on this show, though, is Finn Balor, who post-match attacks Baron Corbin, hitting him with the John Woo dropkick and then the coup de grace double stomp off of the top turnbuckle there. Later on in the show, we officially announced that we're getting Corbin Balor 2 at SummerSlam. Yeah, fucking who?
Yeah, I'm not excited for that at all. Unless it's the return of the demon, then that adds a wrinkle that I care about. But yeah, no one really cares, I don't think.
Do you think they have to tag some kind of stipulation onto this match since they already did the basic bitch match at Extreme Rules? And then the following night on Monday Night Raw?
I mean, they probably will. There's still, what, one more Raw before SummerSlam?
Next week in Greensboro's the go-home.
So, yeah, like, Finn had the unnecessary beatdown. Corbin got the win the week beforehand, so it makes sense that there'd be some kind of big blow-up next week that results in needing some sort of stipulation, but I have no clue what that could be.
Loser must sleep in Balor's playhouse. And then we're going to get a vignette the next night on Monday Night Raw of Baron Corbin having to be all tucked up in that little kid's playhouse.
That would
you
be
laugh,
funny.
Creative would probably... You laugh, but creative would probably consider it. Anywho. Ronda Rousey and Natalya are backstage talking. No reason to get into it. We do find out, though, that Rousey and Alicia Fox is the main event for the show, as if that was ever in any question.
Yeah, not really.
Highlights from Dolphin Drew versus Seth Rollins last week. Angle and Rollins have a conversation that sets up a tag team match where Rollins gets to pick his tag team partner. Real quick, since we're not really going to discuss backstage segments here, there is one with Tyler Breeze backstage and Seth Rollins that I actually thought was pretty funny.
You just like the fact that he referenced the CrossFit Jesus nickname. That's all you liked.
Yeah, but they could have been CrossFit Breezes. That's hilarious.
I suppose
that,
there's some kind of go.
I am becoming more and more of a fan of Breeze the more and more I watch of the Up Up Down Down WWE SmackDown versus Raw 06 play along that they're doing. So
that explains it, because I don't watch Up Up Down Down, so I don't get any extra Tyler Breeze time in my life.
He shows way more personality on that than he's able to on the 30-second backstage segments he gets on Raw, assuming he gets any time at all.
I was going to say he'd have to be on TV to get time first, so there's that saying something, too.
Well, I'm telling you now, the nickname's going to be Mr. Main Event, as in the main event to be show, Tyler Breeze.
You're just...
At least in
okay, did you have some quinoa? Or did you, like, just listen to a lot of Becky Lynch before this podcast? Because you're just... You're on a pun roller coaster right now, and I'm not having much fun with it.
I'm feeling punderful. I don't know what your problem is.
Next segment.
Our next contest is Mojo Rawley and Bobby Roode, and, well, way to kill Mojo. The match itself ends up going...
Come on, that was a pun right there. Come on.
That was not on purpose, though. That one was completely unintentional. 9 minutes and 10 seconds, Bobby Roode picked up the win over Mojo Rawley with the glorious DDT. I talked about this, I think, in the group chat. It may have been with a friend in a personal chat here. The glorious DDT may be the stupidest fucking finish on Raw.
It's old school. It's fine. Like, pile drivers, DDTs, brainbusters used to finish matches all the time. Why can't they still
it's
do it
transitional.
Now?
It's transitional. Because most of the audience in 2018 views the DDT as a transitional maneuver. Don't get me wrong. In the days of Jake the Snake Roberts, that move was fucking death. In 2018,
yeah, but you will...
nobody buys the DDT as a finish.
I mean, they do, because that's a finish in Japan, and lots of people like to watch New Japan. You've got a short arm lariat's a finish there. A vertical drop brainbuster's a finish there. DDT variations are finishers. Like, You have to kind of scale it back after a while, because if you keep going too obscene and too over the top, then you get trashy ass finishers like the Wasteland that fucking Wade Barrett had, which that was a fucking awful finisher. Then you had like the Big Ending, which was just like a shitty gut buster or whatever the fuck it was. Like, come on. A DDT is much better than half of the finishes that most people have in WWE right now.
Okay, but at the same time, Bobby Roode does a absolutely beautiful spine buster, and I think I buy the spine buster more of a finish, especially the way Roode does it, than his implant DDT.
It wasn't even a finish for Arn Anderson, and Arn Anderson was the best spine buster in the business. Still is.
Then fine, let him use the blockbuster as his finish.
But when Rollins uses that as a transitional move, then how can you pass that off as a finish?
That's a fair point, actually. I forgot Seth uses it as well. Anyway, what were your thoughts on the Bobby Roode Mojo Rawley match here with Roode picking up the win at 9 minutes and 10 seconds with the glorious DDT?
It was really, really basic, and it's probably just going to end up Mojo wanting a rematch next week and probably getting the win back. And that's going to be our pre-show opener for SummerSlam, because Bobby should be considered slightly higher on the tier list than Mojo, so it makes sense that he loses in his first attempt. But if they actually want to push him like it seems, he's got to get something next time they face each other. And it feels like it's going to be one of those filler matches for this pre-show for SummerSlam. What do you think?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's a pre-show match for SummerSlam. I honestly was a little bit surprised that they didn't have it as a pre-show match for Extreme Rules. Part of this is going to depend on how long this pre-show for SummerSlam is, too.
Aren't they always like two or 3 hours?
The pre-shows are an hour for most of the B pay-per-views, but I think with this being SummerSlam, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like 5 to 6. Or like 4 to 6, and then Slam runs from like 6 to 11.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking. Or what don't they start at 7 now? So maybe like 5 to 7, and then 7 to 11, or something like that. But
or
same difference. I think it's going
to
be a couple hours for a pre-show, so we'll get 2 or 3 matches, and then we'll get our usual 3.5 to 4 hours of a main pay-per-view, which is just too damn much.
Well, anyone who thinks the cruiserweights are getting on the main card at a SummerSlam is out of their fucking mind, so.
They haven't even been on any of the pay-per-views. Aside from what, Greatest Royal Rumble? Was that the last one they were on?
Yeah, when Kalisto challenged for the title against Cedric. And that was supposed to be Buddy Murphy until they realized he had visa issues.
Wonderful.
All right, so we're going to kind of sum this up as it's basically every Elias segment ever up until the point that Lashley interrupts, and then it becomes every Lashley segment since he's come back afterwards. That being said, the bit of guitar...
There's a new wrinkle, come on.
The bit of guitar playing that Elias did backstage was actually really good.
I mean, Elias is a good guitar player. Like, it's his gimmick to kind of be a condescending prick who just plays stuff that is basic and people know, or something from the city. But I do kind of like this whole concept of him having a camera crew follow him around for like another documentary or something like that.
I believe those are his roadie dogs.
Okay, you just had to?
I did. I had to.
Fine. I was going to liken them more to what Goldust was trying to do earlier this year, late last year, whatever it was, when he was filming the new movies, when he was like going up against R-Truth when he first kind of went back to 90s creepy Goldust, but that fell off a cliff real quick.
When he was supposedly looking for a new protege?
Correct, yes, which fell into nothing, and then he got surgery, and now he's doing fuck all. Or no, he's a sheriff now or something like that, right? That's what he's doing.
if it makes you feel any better, Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Member berries, remember too. Remember Chewbacca? Ooh, I remember.
Remember? I remember. You remember? Anywho, scale of 1 to 10, what's your interest level in Elias versus Lashley?
-5 stars.
Shout out to Matthew Gregg and Botchamania, botchamania.com.
I figured you'd like that one.
Well played.
Why, do you feel differently?
I mean, I'm interested in Elias, not so much Lashley, but definitely Elias.
Yeah, that's honestly the part that's bringing it down for me, too. Don't die.
I'm not going to say that Lashley's had bad matches in his return, because both of the Roman matches were surprisingly good. Like we talked about when it was just the two of us 2 weeks ago, those two have surprising chemistry with each other.
Oh, no, his matches are fine if we take out the Sami Zayn stuff, but it's just he's not an intriguing character at all. Like, he has no command of the microphone, he's got no charisma, you don't buy into him at all. What he says, it's worse than when Roman was like boring. Like, you know, it's just, it's hard to just watch him fucking try to talk. Like, he needs a manager more than Brock Lesnar does.
Hold on.
Y'all wouldn't know entertainment if it slapped you in the face.
That felt like an appropriate sound effect.
It kind of does. It worked well. I'll give you that one.
All right. We see the aforementioned Breeze and Rollins segment here. They apparently are going to do Reigns and Rollins instead. That gets canceled out a little bit later on in the show. We'll get to that in a second here. 50-50 booking, my old friend. Rezar versus Titus O'Neil, because that's just what we needed in August of 2018, a Titus O'Neil singles match. Thank God for that. Get the fuck out of here.
You wanted to say
anybody
thank God
got time for that?
You always got time for Dana Brooke. Don't lie.
That's true. I do always have time for Dana Brooke. That's fact. But I would rather have seen Rezar take on Apollo Crews here. Just keep Titus out of the ring in fucking singles matches. Why? In 2018, is Titus having a goddamn singles match?
Because they have to offset the tag partners. That's how they always do it. Come on, you know that.
Speaking of pre-show matches, hello pre-show, Authors of Pain versus Titus Worldwide. I'll make you a deal.
That is sad, but true.
I will make you a deal, Andrew. I will not bitch about this match on the pre-show if they bring back Dana's suit jacket without the t-shirt underneath.
Oh, they're not going to do that. Come on. That kind of... I'm pretty sure a bunch of little boys that were watching Raw that night had to have the talk because they just saw a lot of things bouncing and didn't know what was going on and why they were feeling funny in a certain place. Like, holy crap.
America! No, she's a fellow Ohioan as well. I'm just saying, she's a fellow Ohioan as well.
So, get her number. Come on.
Her and Alexa both, for that matter, but that's neither here nor there.
So is Miz. So it's not all 100.
Technically, Miz lives in Texas now, or do you not watch Miz and Mrs.?
They moved. That's fine. But just because you move out of Ohio doesn't mean you're no longer from Ohio.
I'm sure there are a lot of people that would like to claim that to be the case. And I say that as somebody who still lives in Ohio. Anyway, now that I've offended part of our listening audience, the three people that do listen on a regular basis, let's move on. The Kevin Owens Show with guest Jinder Mahal and Sameer Sunil. I can't fucking tell them apart.
Shamir, Shamazel, House and Pfeffer Incorporated, whoever. I don't know.
Muhammad Hassan.
Whoa, that's getting racist now. You stop that. Calm down.
Actually, he just returned to wrestling a little bit ago. Did you hear about that?
You know, I wasn't sure if that was legit or not, but I did hear a couple things, yes.
He worked a show in New York for a promotion up there. He was in the main event in a title match against somebody in New York. And apparently, Capone wants to get back involved in wrestling again. I actually really liked the Muhammad Hassan character, and I thought that the original intent for the character could have worked had they not gone full-blown racist with it.
Well, it was just bad timing. That's really all that really turned out to be.
No, it was still racist. Oh, terrorist.
It was, but it's WWE. That's all they know how to do is be offensively racist when it comes to caricatures of certain races.
But if you recall, the original point of being outsiders in their own country was really cool, in my opinion.
It wasn't bad. I'm not arguing that. It's just, it was a shitty time, and shitty time for that character to come out, and then it just kind of ruined his career, unfortunately.
Speaking of shitty characters, Jinder Mahal's the guest on the Kevin Owens show. Segway! What do you
mean,
make of this meditation?
But true.
What do you make of this meditation guru? Can I just state for the record that Sanjay did it better?
You know, I kind of blocked out the fact that Sanjay Dutt did like the love guru kind of gimmick for
God
damn it. Yes, I remember now. I tried to forget that because that was like dark period at like TNA.
That was Bischoff Hogan era TNA.
Hey, it was like towards the end of that when things started to get bad. Yes. Oh, you fucking bae. Yeah, Sanjay did do it better, sadly. Okay.
I enjoyed Guru Sanjay. Anyway, the segment itself gets interrupted when they're starting to call out Braun Strowman, and Braun Strowman flips over the stage again. Uh-huh. Because he hasn't done that before. Color me not impressed. The announce table.
Well, that wasn't the announce table. That was a whole staging area.
It was a whole staging area when he flipped the announce table.
No, that was just an announce table, wasn't it?
Go back and watch it on the
network. When he flipped it on Kane? When he flipped it on Kane?
Yes. It was
just an announce table.
No, it wasn't. It was a whole section of the
stage. It was a much smaller one. It was slightly elevated. That's not a staging area. That's like lit. That's like Tony Schiavone's chair from WCW. This was a whole extra piece of staging equipment. Come on. It's different.
Yes, but was it the greatest chair in the history of our great sport?
Shut up.
What happened when... with Tony Schiavone available on MLW.
Yes. And Westwood won now too, right?
I don't know. I can't say I'm up to date on that. I'm a little bit behind. I've been trying to catch up on something to wrestle in the last couple of days.
Yeah, I've been following more Raven Effect and 83 Weeks. I kind of fell off with What Happened When. I need to catch back up with that.
I do need to catch up. I do need to start listening to 83 Weeks because I haven't listened to an episode of that yet. See, this is why we're called Raw Reaction, not The Raw Reaction. We can touch everything in pro wrestling. Eventually,
exactly.
You know,
we just react rawly to everything. We like, ooh, baby, we like it raw. Then we could also talk about Shane Strickland beating Matt Riddle for the Evolve title because Riddle's going to be coming to NXT soon.
Now, here's my question. Have they relaxed the marijuana policy at NXT? Is that how Riddle's able to sign? Because as I understand it, they want Riddle to sign a contract. Riddle wants to roll that contract up and smoke it.
Yeah, Platt and I were discussing that on Potty's War, last Thursday? And I don't know. Like, we were just kind of both perplexed, like, if they've... like lessened on their green restrictions, quote unquote, so to speak. If it's just a fine, if it's a don't ask, don't tell, if it's a don't come into work stoned, but do what you want on your own time. I don't know. Like, the whole world is changing their view on it, so maybe WWE is starting to also.
Now that it's legal in certain states, I guess it's legal in the WWE's playbook or whatever. I don't know. All right, back to the Braun Strowman.
Is it legal in Connecticut?
NXT is technically based out of Florida.
Oh, well, everything's legal in Florida. Come on, we were just over that. Bizarro Land.
This is true, not to mention most of the crazy news stories you hear, a Florida man or a Florida woman.
This is true. Yes, selling tickets to heaven and all that other stuff. These are all Florida stories. Yes, very true.
My favorite one that I've seen recently is man gets arrested after throwing an alligator at a drive-thru employee who would not give him an extra sauce packet for his chicken nuggets.
That seems like proper punishment. I want another barbecue sauce. No, well, fuck you, alligator. Okay.
There is no word on whether or not it was a University of Florida Gator. We'll keep you up to date as we find out. Anyway.
Tim Tebow's just in the poor girl's lap. Hi, how are you? Oh, shit, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, his baseball season is over. It's not like he has anything better to do these days.
Okay, fair enough. Yes, and he just start reciting, like, Bible passages to people.
All while doing the pose.
Well,
anywho.
Wasn't one of his legs the reason why he's out of baseball?
Yep. Wrist.
So he can't... hit wrist. Okay.
It turns into Braun Strowman versus Jinder Mahal for the second week in a row. It's not any better this week than it was last week, but this time it ends in a disqualification. Really, we're just running the gambit of ways that Kevin Owens can steal the briefcase from Strowman at SummerSlam, thus telling you that Kevin Owens is about to catch an ass-whooping at SummerSlam.
Maybe. You never know. I think it'd be funnier if Kevin Owens did beat him for the briefcase. That would be such a good swerve.
Video package for Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar. Make your own jokes.
Woo-hoo!
How nice of them to include a pitch break during Raw. Greatly appreciated.
We're not at the Riot Squad match yet. Relax.
We're getting there. We are about to have the tag team match with Rollins and Reigns taking on McIntyre and Ziggler, but Stephanie McMahon has cut off Kurt Angle's balls once again, and Kurt Angle was forced to tell Roman that Stephanie wishes to protect the SummerSlam main event, therefore he cannot allow Roman to compete twice in one evening, therefore it is now a handicap match. Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre, although now I'm kind of envisioning Seth and Dolph and Seth and Drew as a tag team, that could work. They could be like the bearded brothers or their own children. Anyway, Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre taking on Seth Rollins in the handicap match. Reigns, before leaving, asks Corbin if his ribs hurt. Corbin gives him a weird look. Reigns punches him in the ribs.
That was such a good rib.
And I'm too funny?
Hey, I went with it because you already set the bar really low.
Handicap match is next, and Michael Cole is a fucking idiot. Shall I expect? Yes, McIntyre was tagged into the match when he went for the Claymore before Rollins countered out. Ziggler was legally tagged back into the match before the finish. Cole's apparently getting blind in his old age. In fairness, he also announces that Rousey taps out Alexa Bliss later on in the show, so what the fuck is Cole now?
Your thoughts
on the handicap
match? Commentary could have also just been really, really, really trying to cover for Seth losing, even though it was a handicap match against two upper mid-card, lower main event guys, and it's not anything to be upset about, but then if it was the wrong person pinned him, then that's even less credible of a loss. So it just makes Seth look strong. That's all it is. Uh-oh. It sounds like the other line went kaputsky. It's kaded. And I know dead doesn't start with the K, but I wanted to say kaded. Kaded, kabob, kadoo-doo-doo-doo-doo. What happened? Oh shit, fuck you. God damn it. What happened? Where are we? Doo-doo-doo-doo-dee-lee-dee.
Won't you share with me if you can believe? Tell us what you're running from, to where you go, from whence you've come. We share this need for
Sorry about that, Andrew.
Well, hot damn, what happened, buddy?
My phone overheated and croaked.
Wait, is it 1999? Are you like one of those Nokia bricks?
It's a cell phone. It's a smartphone with a battery that is less than competent. I'm in the process of getting a new battery ordered for it. It's a Nexus 6. It overheats, and when it overheats on occasion, it's been prone to shutting down.
That's not one of those ones that exploded on the plane, now, is it?
No, I don't think so. I think those were iPhones, actually. Fuck Apple.
Yes, I agree. Fuck Apple. I'm a Droid person myself. But I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure which one was the kaboom one, because I haven't heard of things overheating since a long time.
Well, in any regard here, what did I miss while my phone was croaking?
I don't know, because I started to just vamp and I forgot where I even left off with questioning. So what match were we at? I think we were at the Seth thing, and I think I ended it more or less with yada, yada, yada. Seth had to look strong, so they were making a lot of accommodations and excuses.
Seth had to look strong, you say? Usually that's reserved for Roman.
I know, I use that wording on purpose.
Yuck, 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 yuck. Anywho. We're turning into Goofy over here. The show is making us Goofy.
Gosh.
Oh, gosh, Mickey. Anywho. So, 2, 4, 6, 8, whose new music do we hate? B-Team.
Yeah, B-Team. It sucks. Fucking Spirit Squad bootleg jobber fucking music. What the fuck is that shit? Oh, my God.
Tell me how you really feel, Andrew.
As soon as I heard it, I'm just like, is the Spirit Squad coming out? Last time I saw Mickey and Kenny were at fucking MLW Battle Riot. Like, I'm like, I didn't think they were back with WWE. No, they're not. B-Team just changed their good music into garbage. What the hell? Who thought that was a good idea? What the shit?
I actually really liked Battle Scars, too. That's what sucks about this to me.
My problem is that Battle Scars is at least a theme song where when they lose the belt and have to either figure out a new gimmick or at least change direction of being the undefeated goofball team, you can become a serious team with the Battle Scars team. With this, you're just relegated to Jobber Joke Squad, and it's fucking stupid. It's too on the nose, and that's my big problem.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think the problem is that nobody's going to take them seriously with this as their theme song here. Not that they're probably going to be keeping the belts for a whole hell of a lot longer anyway, but with the Battle Scars theme song that they had, which I do believe might have been down straight,
I have no clue.
But with the Battlescores theme song, which, as I said, I believe might have been downstroke there, there's at least some semblance of credibility with quality theme song. Whereas, like you mentioned, this is like Spirit Squad 2K18 bullshit.
Yes. Yes. That's my problem. It was a goofy team or like a Spirit Squad, sure. But if you're trying to build up your champions as somebody who actually has a shot and not just a bunch of fluky idiots, this is not the right team.
Well, those fluky idiots end up having a match against the Revival non-title until they are interrupted by Bray Wyatt and Matt Hardy using magic-y voodoo, Papa Shango style, in order to make one half of each tag team disappear. They fucking disappeared.
Seems legit.
Facts. You know what else is
disappearing? I mean, it's the perfect way to get a no contest, because that means they hit both of them at the same time, so one can't win over the other.
You know what's disappearing for me, Andrew? My interest in the Raw Tag Team Division.
Hey, I was going to say the same thing.
Oh, Jesus. All right. Okay, breathe. Anywho. Moving on. Paul Heyman sit-down interview. I actually like the way that Heyman came across in this segment. You weren't as much of a fan. I'll let you give your explanation first as to why you didn't like it, and then I'll talk about why I did.
It's not a fact of like or dislike, because like we were saying in our chat, Heyman did what he was supposed to. He acted through it well, but I'm not supposed to care. Like, if we really take Heyman's character as what he is, he's a disingenuous, shyster prick who always tries to fuck people over to get his way. So the fact that he finally got quote-unquote screwed by Brock, and now their friendship is in limbo, and he still considers him a friend, it's like the stupidest breakup, and I don't care, because I'm not supposed to. For all we know, this is just a ruse, and Heyman's gonna end up coming out during SummerSlam to try to screw over Roman and make it seem like it was just part of the plan the whole time, and it's a way to keep the belt on Brock. But just, did Heyman play his part that he was given well? Sure. But I'm still not supposed to care if I'm actually looking at the character for how he's been portrayed for the last fucking, what, 10, 15 years?
I am not the most hip-hoppiest person on the show. By all means, I've never claimed to be such. That's Tony's genre. You can check out Tony actually reviewing wrestler hip-hop tracks over 411mania.com/music chill. But for some odd reason, with the way you just phrased that there, Akon's Lonely just popped into my head for no real apparent reason.
I don't even know that song to reference off of it, so I'll say okay.
It uses the old Roy Orbison Lonely track sample, which is what popped into my head.
The I'm so lonely I could die?
No, that's Hank Williams. That's Hank Williams Sr. Lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely.
Oh, that one. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that one. And that's all the singing I'm going to be doing on the rest of tonight's show, because they took away these battle scars, fuckers. Anyway.
Everything will come back to battle scars.
Indeed. I actually really enjoyed the way that Heyman portrayed himself on this show. In storyline context, it makes zero fucking sense to try to make Heyman sympathetic. Why? Because, as you mentioned, Heyman has been, is, and probably always will be a dirtball heel. That being said, in order to attempt to build some kind of sympathy against Brock Lesnar and towards Paul Heyman on the basis of their apparent breakup last week, you have this kind of segment where Heyman is heartbroken, air quotes on an audio podcast, about the way things have transpired, as if he hasn't turned on Brock himself a half dozen times before. Now, I know, I'm not supposed to remember that. If it didn't happen 6 weeks ago, it doesn't exist. But
exactly.
To long-term wrestling fans, having Heyman acting so heartbroken about Lesnar treating him the way that he treated him after what Heyman's done to Lesnar over the years, it seems like a slap in the face to our intelligence. true. All right. Do we have anything else to add about this segment?
Nothing really, except I will give Heyman the credit of probably being the best actor on the Raw roster at the moment. Granted, yes, it's still in that wheelhouse that he always does, but it's always convincing, and it always seems genuine. So I'll give him credit where credit is due.
I'll put it this way. Execution with excellent content left a lot to be desired.
Sure, yeah.
Fair enough,
I agree.
All right, rematch, because everybody loves rematches. As the Boston Hug Connection, get the fuck out of here with that dumbest fuck name. Seriously, whoever thought of that name should be shot, and if they survive, shot again.
And then shot one more time for good measure.
They take on the Riot Squad here. This time, the Riot Squad picks up the win, as Ruby Riott makes her television return and pulls Liv Morgan out of the way of a dive attempt by Bayley, allowing a distracted Sasha Banks. Distraction roll-up! Yeah! To be rolled up by Sarah Logan for the pinfall at 10 minutes and 45 seconds.
Well, I mean, the two good things that come from this are, even though it was a rematch that people didn't see much point to, it was to reintroduce Ruby to TV, which, that's fine. That's a good wrinkle. And
like
the second good... I mean, she's the most competent of the three, and she's not a terrible wrestler, so why not? But the second point that I was getting at was Sarah got the pin, and they've already kind of been building her as the better of her and Liv. You know, she broke Ember's streak. She's the bigger one. She's a little tougher. She seems a little more competent, and she doesn't have the moniker of juvenile delinquent. So at least the right person got the pin. So reintroducing the leader and the right person getting the pin, it's fine booking.
But she's a Viking.
Stop it. I heard that too. The Vikings, the Raw roster, so I'm like, oh, fucking shut up, Cole. What the fuck?
We kind of talked about this when we did the NXT review a couple of weeks ago, myself and Brandon Biska being over on the W2M network. And we talked about it just seems as a way to kind of shoehorn her in with her real-life fiancé, Ray Rowe, once War Raiders get the call-up from NXT.
I think we touched on that, too, a little bit the first time they debuted her Viking heritage thing. Because it makes a lot of sense, and it would be a good way to split apart Riot Squad. Because as a group, they're not very good. But and in the same respect, Liv Morgan kind of needs them. So I don't know what the fuck they're going to do with that group, honestly.
Alicia Fox gets promo time before the main event.
Yeah, that's my watching moment right there.
allow me to let these four words sink in. You ready, Andrew?
Shoot.
Alicia Fox, main eventer.
Eh, that doesn't bother me.
It does bother me.
Why? Alicia's never been that terrible, honestly, when she's given a shot.
That's hilarious.
Recently.
Have you not seen her try to murder people with a scissor kick?
Recently, she has been better, when there's been better competition. You're talking like back in the Divas era where nobody knew how to take a bump and all that other stuff. Yes, everybody looked bad. Everybody was trying to kill each other, it looked like, because it was awful. And to be completely fair, like, the way Ronda did the judo throws on Alicia didn't look like they were protecting her much either. So.
Oh, no. We'll talk about the match here in a second because I got a few things to say about that as well. But what were your thoughts on the pre-match promo there? I mean, obviously, Alexa comes off as a star. We can sit here and sing the praises of Alexa all night. And trust me, give us the chance, and we probably would. But I want to get your thoughts on specifically how you thought Alicia did here, because this is clearly the biggest spotlight of Alicia Fox's career, is it not? I know she's a former women's champion, but she was a women's champion when, let's be honest, that belt did not mean shit.
Well, yeah, but then again, she was also in a, what, 2 or 3 month storyline between Cedric Alexander and Noam Dar, where she was constantly on TV. Then that she spun that into, like, the captain of the Survivor Series women's squad, so... This might be the biggest singles match, but I wouldn't say it's the most star time she's had.
Are you saying you approved of Alicia Fox?
I mean, I didn't approve of it, but it was somewhat amusing to say Fox.
I miss Noam Dar going Fox.
I kind of do too, but no.
You do realize
opening.
You do realize you're going to have to move her to SmackDown next year, right?
Why?
So that way Fox can be on Fox. How did you not see that coming?
I was hoping that you had another direction and you weren't just going for low-hanging fruit, but you did. You did. So good for you.
Hey.
Sometimes
the low hanging is the easiest to access. Anyway, the match itself is...
That's what she said.
Waka waka. Let's be honest. The match itself is rough. But I think almost intentionally so, Andrew. Like, I think Rousey's meant to come off as kind of clunky inside of the ring because she's somebody that's just adjusting to the world of professional wrestling. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that it's going to get a ton better once she gets more time in the ring under her belt because this is, what, her third match, I believe? Or at least her third match.
Well, her third televised match, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was about to correct myself with. And her first on an actual episode of Monday Night Raw. But
correct.
I think that they're kind of going for that clunky vibe with Ronda inside of the ring. I just worry about some of the talent taking some of the moves that she does there, because first it was the Iponesa that she had with Nia Jax at Money in the Bank, where she almost dropped Nia on her goddamn head. And then tonight there was a Sambo throw inside of the ring where she almost drops Alicia on the back of her goddamn head.
Yeah, and the judo throws that I mentioned, that just, she looked like she was literally just whipping her around by the fucking arm instead of, you know, using her shoulder and her back to throw her over like she's supposed to. And that's just, it looked bad. Granted, it could have been Foxy, because she sells weird because she's crazy and she does odd shit. So I don't know whose fault that was, but it looked rough. And yes, the match itself wasn't supposed to be pretty. I mean, it was overbooked with Alexa interfering like 7 times and then Natty getting thrown into a pole, but then somehow being awake enough to celebrate after the match, and then doesn't interfere, stop Alexa. I don't know.
Hey, that is Ronda Rousey's best friend, Natalya, you're talking about there, sir.
Yeah, I'm aware, because that's like her only claim to fame, apparently, anymore. So, but
she's
whatever.
Not a-
and for...
She's not a former 3-time champion anymore. She's just Ronda Rousey's best friend.
Yeah, she also wasn't watching her back after the victory, because Alexa doesn't come up very gracefully, and yet Ronda still gets to fling her around once. And Natty just sits there and goes, "Oh my God." Like, that's great. That's good. That's really good for someone that went through the Hart Dungeon and is part of the Hart family and a former multiple-time champion, but... Yeah, she's just going to watch it happen.
Okay,
yep.
Do you think that might be teasing the eventual turn that we all know is coming? That maybe part of her wants to see Alexa take out Rousey?
It could.
I mean, I don't think they're thinking that far ahead. But anything's possible.
How far ahead is it, really? Because where do you go after Alexa? Like, let's all assume that Ronda's going to win, because you can't legitimately have Alexa beat her unless there's interference or some kind of shenanigans. So, who steps up first against Ronda if it's not Natalya?
Well, I think Alexa gets a rematch in September, but then I wouldn't be surprised to see Natty going into, like, Hell in a Cell or Survivor Series.
And not to mention, Alexa's rematch could always be on a Raw, which would then free up the pay-per-view again.
The post-match attack that you just discussed happens afterwards. Ronda screams at Alexa that she can hold on to that title as tightly as she wants to. But come SummerSlam, it's still coming home with Rousey.
That was bad, too. That was awful.
That hurt a little.
That sounded like it came from, like, the diaphragm, dude. Like, you know, don't get so angry. It's okay.
Yeah, that was not very stomach wobble. That was definitely diaphragm, and that hurt a little. I think I'm going to need some Sprite. The official soft drink of CSPN.
Please don't sue us, but please endorse us.
And that officially wraps up this episode of Monday Night Raw. All right, Andrew. Favorite match or moment on tonight's show?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, the whole show was just so blasé that I can't actually pick out something that I really, really enjoyed.
CrossFit Breezes.
Yeah, I'll just say Roman in general. I'll give it to Roman because I found Roman enjoyable.
I'm going to give mine to Seth and Tyler's backstage segment because I actually was entertained by it. It was cute. It was good for a quick chuckle, something that you didn't have to think too much about, and then that they could just move on right from. With the overall wrestling on tonight's show being relatively lackluster, despite the fact that there were eight matches, you know, it felt like nine. I'm going to go with moment and give it to CrossFit Breezes. The least favorite match or moment, it is the Greg Watry moment of the evening.
Ooh, Greg Watry time. I think I already basically said it, but yeah, that whole Alicia Fox, Alexa Bliss lead-in promo thing, and the match too, like that whole, the main event was just, had Watry written all over it.
Rezar and Titus O'Neil. Whoever made the decision to let Titus have a singles match in 2018 should be taken out behind the barn in Old Yeller.
True. I guess we could also give an honorable mention to whoever wrote the script to the opening segment, because that was such basic bullshit with cutoffs and back and forth and just so bad. At least the crowd was behind Roman, but like the stuff that was coming out of their mouth was just fucking stupid.
Scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to say 5.
I'm going to land right there with you at a 5. This was every episode of Monday Night Raw this year rolled into one, basically. Meaningless matches going on for extended periods of time, segments backstage that advanced literally nothing, and the only real highlight of the show to me was Paul Heyman. I should have given him credit in my favorite match of moments. So. That's okay. I still enjoy CrossFit.
Hey, you can still give him MVP.
I can, but I won't.
I'm just saying you could, because that's the last thing we have to go over.
Who is your MVP?
My MVP was probably, I'm going to still go with Roman. Like, everything Roman did, even from the stupid little rib punch to the way he held himself in the interviews and or the promo segments, like, it was good. Like, it actually sells him as being the babyface, the one to rally behind in this feud, rivalry, storyline, whatever you want to call it. What about you?
I'm going to go with an R as well. But not Reigns, the other Shield guy with an R last name. Rollins. The handicap match is probably better than it had any right to be, being a handicap match, but that's because Rollins shows such great babyface fire. You can tell that a significant portion of the audience is just so far into him as a babyface that the sky is the limit for him in this babyface role, and I think will be so even more so once the return of a certain third Shield member happens, probably right around SummerSlam, and they decide whether they want to go with the reunion that got curtailed due to injuries earlier, or if they decide to pull the trigger on the Ambrose heel turn that was supposed to happen around WrestleMania.
They better pull the trigger on that heel turn, because Ambrose is just so stale before he got injured that he needs something, and a heel turn could be exactly what it is, because he went from lunatic fringe to, like, your crazy, creepy uncle from a barbecue, like, real quick, and it was fucking embarrassing.
Seems accurate. Did you watch any of Evolve this weekend? I know you mentioned the Shane Strickland-Matt Riddle match.
What did I watch? I watched the tag match with Chris Dickinson and Jaka versus, TK Cooper and Tracy Williams. A little bit of the... Huh? Hot sauce, yes. A little bit of the Janela AR Fox match and the Perot versus Maserati squash. I was kind of flipping through it, but yeah, I saw, I guess, a portion of it.
So do you, like, subscribe to WWN?
Do I, like, what?
Subscribe to WWN.
I do not know.
Oh, well, then we'll talk about this off air.
Yes, nefarious means are fun.
All right, so should I let the cat out of the bag as to what I teased earlier in the show?
You can if you would like, yes.
I think I kind of want to.
Okay, then do
so
it.
Greg, our evil overlord, Greg DeMarco, seems to be of the opinion that reviews are opinion pieces. I don't necessarily know if I agree with that, but for the sake of it being his website, I'm willing to go along with it.
Well, it is, as long as you add your opinion and flair to it and don't just go over each match line by line and then just stop there.
Well, back when Greg DeMarco launched an original website, it was called WrestlingSmash.com. And there was a schmuck who used to do the Raw, SmackDown, Impact, and... Fuck, what was the other show I was doing? Superstars. Reviews on a weekly basis for him when it was WrestlingSmash.com.
Who was that schmuck?
That schmuck was me.
Oh, fuck that guy. Wait, oh, sorry, never mind. Go.
No, I agree. Fuck that guy. Fuck him. To borrow a line from Cheeky Baby here. Fuck him. Anyway. Well, Greg and I have been talking, and one of the things that we agree about the ChairShot.com show is that there isn't nearly enough independent wrestling coverage on it.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Therefore, starting with the first chapter, what I watched, which is what the reviews were called back when I was doing them originally for Wrestling Smashed, is returning to the Chair Shot, and it is returning as I cover Progress Wrestling out of England. It's returning as I cover Shakara here in the United States, and is returning as I cover GFW, Impact, TNA, call it whatever the fuck you want to, out of Canada. The first What I Watched will hopefully be up by the end of this week, and we'll cover Progress Chapter 1.
Oh, very nice. Did Greg give you an idea of what day to push for? Because him and I obviously rotate between who publishes what day and what does.
We haven't officially worked out the details as far as when it's expected, but Greg and I are going to be talking once we finish the show, so.
That works. So, one of you loop me in, just so I know.
We'll talk about it in the reaction chat. Don't worry.
That's cool. Okay.
And I guess if you guys are interested in reading what I have to say about Progress Wrestling, you'll just have to check out thechairshot.com.
And if you're not, then I don't know how the hell you're listening to this right now. Because it's probably not Blog Talk.
Well, we occasionally get posted on the Chair Shot Facebook group.
They should still know about the Chair Shot. Come on. Like, come on.
Of course they know about the Chair Shot on the Facebook. Of course they know about the Chair Shot on the Facebook group. Have you been on the Facebook group lately? All that we have posted on the group is great, posting stuff from the website.
Yeah, we just need more activity from the members, that it's not news articles, just random shit, but we'll figure that out.
We need a balance. That's what we need. Right now, we don't really have one, the Facebook group, but we're working on it. We're getting back there. Don't worry, everybody.
Well, that's because we have automatic posting now, and Greg takes advantage of that, whatever he's admin for, so certain opinion pieces and everything, if he's got the freedom in certain Facebook groups, they just auto-post.
Ah, that explains why that stuff gets posted directly to the site now. Now I know. Okay, good to know.
Exactly. So it's not just Greg being a shill, it's Greg getting a bot to be a shill for us.
But it is still Greg being a shill, let's be honest.
I mean, it is his site, so he kind of wants to make it work, you know? I don't blame him too much.
Hey, if the Chair Shot thing takes off and I can actually start getting financially supported to do these reviews, fuck yeah, I'm all for it.
Hey, you and me both, Harry.
If there is one thing that Andrew and I can't agree on, is that we will sell out for the almighty dollar.
Oh, hell yeah. Everybody's got to pray.
I miss Ted DiBiase.
That's a good thing to end it on, though. So let's quickly, before it gets bad, let's just end it there.
So, for the non-existent, well, I guess non-existent in terms of the show, he still exists in real life, we think.
Okay, he's just absent. Come on, relax.
For the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero, he's Andrew Ballas. I'm Harry Broadhurst. This is the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Podcast Network. CSPN. Please don't sue us. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you guys next Monday night here on the Reaction. You have been listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Podcast Network. CSPN. Please don't sue us. I'm Harry Broadhurst. He was Andrew Ballast. For the absent Tony Acero, thank you for listening. We'll catch you guys next Monday night with the Go Home episode of Monday Night Raw and our predictions for the 2018 edition of SummerFest. Wait, that's not right. SummerSlam here on the Chair Shot Podcast Network.